The following opinions expressed are those of the host, his guests, and callers. The opinions do not in any way represent those of the staff, management, or sponsors of WebmasterRadio.fm. Listener discretion is advised.
It's time to search for truth. Fight for our freedom. And talk with some common sense. From WebmasterRadio.fm's world headquarters in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, this is the Jerry Abrams Show. Now, here's Jerry Abrams.
Hello, America, and those listening around the world. Tonight, President Obama will present his State of the Union address to the nation. Since the resounding message of the historic fall election that took away his lock on Congress, the media establishment has made every effort to interpret his words as signs that he has heard the message and is moving to the center. Words won't make us more competitive. Words won't improve the economy or put people back to work. Words won't change the perception of this nation around the world or gain back respect for us. We have to pay close attention to what the actions are, and particularly to his agenda. This president is committed to having his way and is not above going around our elected lawmakers by using his presidential powers to do it. The key word to look for in his speech tonight is investment, the code word for spending. Stimulus could have been spent on infrastructure repair and replacement. Albeit temporary jobs, at least we would have something to show for it. Instead, stimulus money was passed out as rewards for his political supporters, and this nation goes deeper and deeper in debt. Our recent college graduates who supported Obama are disappointed because they worked hard and they got their education and found the entry-level positions had been filled by experienced people who were out of work. The president will probably say that we need to spend more on education. If he gets his way, how much money will be wasted by filtering it through the bureaucrats in the Department of Education? I imagine that the president will push his green agenda to the detriment of our national safety and our economy. Past presidents have given lip service to energy independence in their State of the Union addresses. But the small, vocal environmental movement in America has had and continues to have a stranglehold on our economy. And it's unlikely that this president will do anything but tighten that stranglehold. The American people can jumpstart our economy by using the bountiful natural resources and technology that we're blessed with. All we need is the permission of the government that we elect. Look at what Obama does behind the scenes. Behind the scenes because the media chooses to keep the people in the dark. Despite Obama's green dream, combustion engines and our dependence on fossil fuels is not going to go away anytime in the near future. It's time for common sense and reality before it's too late. Obama's war on oil is a war on our economy. Thank you, John Myers. Welcome to 2011, another year for President Barack Obama, whose energy policies are dictated not from the White House, but from Abu Dhabi and Riyadh. Obama's Christmas gift to the nation was the December announcement by the president himself to clamp down further on domestic oil and gas drilling. Welcome to the new year where pump prices now average more than $3 a gallon. Despite the worst recession since the Great Depression, we are paying the highest prices for gas since 2008, all thanks to Obama's need to go green, which is enriching Arab oil producers while putting America's future at risk. Obama regulators have been busy slipping in ill-advised energy policies. First came the pre-Thanksgiving announcement that oil exploration and drilling in Alaska would be curtailed. All for a good cause, said the Obamaites, to help save vast expanses of polar bear habitat. Then Obama's Department of the Interior made a pre-Christmas policy change that would further cut domestic oil supplies by making energy-rich lands untouchable. It seems that Obama forgot that designating federal lands as wilderness areas was supposed to require an act of Congress. Yet the day before Christmas Eve, Obama's Department of the Interior did a coup d'etat. As a result, the Obama administration alone is able to judge where oil can or cannot be drilled. In doing this, Obama has thwarted George W. Bush's policy that restricted unilateral action by the White House. Then there is the drilling in Deepwater Gulf of Mexico. Nearly 3 months after the Obama administration lifted its ban, oil companies are still waiting for approval to drill the first new well in the Gulf. In fact, the petroleum industry expects the wait to continue until the second half of 2011 and perhaps well into 2012. This long delay by the Obama administration is costing oil companies billions of dollars that they have tied up in Gulf projects. Projects that are now on hold, while petroleum companies pay out thousands of dollars every day on rigs that stand idle. The Wall Street Journal wrote this indictment of Obama's energy policy, quote, "Their impact goes beyond the oil industry. The Gulf Coast economy has been hit hard by the slowdown in drilling activity, especially because the oil spill also hurt the region's fishing and tourism industries. The Obama administration in September estimated that 8,000 to 12,000 workers could lose their jobs temporarily as a result of the moratorium. The slowdown also has long-term implications for U.S. oil production, and some independent estimates have been much, much higher. The Energy Information Administration, the research arm of the Department of Energy, last month predicted that domestic offshore oil production will fall 13% this year from 2010 due to the moratorium and the slow return to drilling. A year ago, the agency predicted offshore production would rise 6% in 2011. The difference? A loss of about 220,000 barrels of oil a day," close quote. All of which leaves America more susceptible to an Arab oil embargo. The last one happened in the 1970s when the United States was pumping twice as much oil as it is now. With the U.S. gulping more foreign crude than ever, Arabs could bring America to its knees. You would think that a president, as smart as Obama, would understand the risk that he is putting the nation in, a nation which he has sworn to protect. Perhaps the greatest waste of American resources is out west, where there is potentially hundreds of millions of barrels in oil reserves and trillions of cubic feet in gas deposits, all of which just waiting to be drilled and pumped to a thirsting nation. Yet our president is obstructing America from meeting its energy needs. Utah is particularly hard hit, with up to 6 million acres in jeopardy of being locked away from development. Representative Rob Bishop, a Republican from Utah, told the Salt Lake Tribune, "This decision will seriously hinder domestic energy development and further contribute to the uncertainty and economic distress that continues to prevent the creation of new jobs in a region that has unduly suffered from this administration's radical policies." But there's more. 2 days before Christmas, the Environmental Protection Agency undertook a Pearl Harbor-like preemptive attack on U.S. refiners with an order that will place severe limits on carbon dioxide emissions. The EPA, in language Joseph Stalin would have been proud of, said the details have yet to be determined. The bottom line is that under Obama, Washington is certain to increase the cost of converting oil into gasoline. If you are looking forward to spending $5 a gallon at the pumps, you will love Obama's bold new move to make America more green. The $5 gallon is not just a number picked out of the air. The former president of Shell Oil says that it's entirely possible, as high demand pushes the price for crude oil higher and higher, culminating sometime by the third quarter of 2012, retail pump prices in places like California and New York will reach roughly $5 a gallon, said former Shell Oil president John Hoffmeister. Former Energy Secretary Bill Richardson was asked about Hoffmeister's stock prediction. "I hope he's wrong, but this is a very volatile energy market, and we haven't moved as fast as we should in America toward reducing our dependence on fossil fuels." Hoffmeister underscores the urgent need to develop domestic oil production, and he even accuses the Obama administration of being anti-oil. "I have no problem moving beyond oil, but not today, not tomorrow, not 2011 or 2012. We can't. It's simply impractical and unreal," Hoffmeister said. Meanwhile, the Department of Energy has put out a statement saying it will continue to pursue responsible oil and gas production while focusing on vehicle efficiency standards and investing in electric vehicles, biofuels, and mass transit. Obama's Department of Energy must think America alone can make the earth green. What the president seems to forget is the fact that China, India, and Russia, along with a host of third-world polluters, are using coal and even wood furnaces to drive their industries. It appears to me that Obama's green policies are nothing more than collateral damage to a nation that needs domestic petroleum and the jobs that that industry provides. Instead, Obama's policies seem to be helping Arab oil exporters. If you think I exaggerate, consider this from the December 29th Economist, not known as a bastion of conservative ideals. "Mr. Obama's team of managing the Middle East is even more inept than Mr. Bush's. The American right and many Israelis think he is too pro-Arab." People in the petroleum industry don't believe Obama is pro-North America, at least not when it comes to energy. Canada's oil sands, which help keep America on the road every day, have been labeled dirty oil by Obama Democrats, as if the crude they pump out of the Saudi desert was somehow clean. And given the political realities that exist in many parts of Alaska, Sarah Palin has a greater chance of hitting a gusher with an errant shot from her AR-15 than big oil has with a drill bit. Despite Bush's multiple mistakes in the Middle East, he was a patriot who at least wanted to ramp up domestic oil and gas production. That's not true of Obama. who seems intent on increasing America's dependency on Arab oil. Oil has topped $90 a barrel. I believe that by summer it will break over $100 a barrel. That makes big oil a good investment. But at what cost? Under Obama's presidency, we are headed for an energy crisis worse than anything President Jimmy Carter could have engineered. Just how high oil prices will go, I don't know. Much depends on what will happen in the 2012 election. We're going to take a short break for the sponsors right now, but when I come back, we'll talk about Obama's war on coal.
This is the Jerry Abrams Show.
Two, one, boost to ignition.
Ascend into new heights of ranking and revenue with a search engine friendly online shopping cart that's ready for liftoff. Introducing Ascender Cart. Ascender Cart optimizes your shopping cart with easy-to-use SEO tools that will help build keywords, titles, and tags for top search engine rankings. Get all of the advantages of having a shopping cart on your site and monitor your progress with regular reports in just a click. Prepare to launch your shopping cart to the top of the search engines with Ascender Cart. Learn more about what Ascender Cart can do for you at AscenderCart.com. AscenderCart.com.
If you're looking for a new multifaceted SEO and social media toolset, look for the Raven. Raven has the important tools that every internet marketer needs. Raven offers customized metrics for managing link building campaigns, social media campaigns, with campaign reporting and research tools that you can easily manage. Build up campaign performance for your clients and give your team the tools that will make them soar. If you want to increase your internet marketing revenue, look for the Raven. Go to RavenTools.com. That's RavenTools.com.
State of Search, your home for the latest search marketing news and views of the world. Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, or on demand anytime inside the International Marketing Channel. Only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
Time for some more talk with some common sense. This is the Jerry Abrams Show.
So I promised you Obama's war on coal, keeping a campaign vow to bankrupt the industry. The administration revokes the permit of an approved working coal mine in West Virginia. I guess those electric cars will have to wait to get their energy elsewhere. We and others have warned that in the wake of November's shellacking, the Obama administration would attempt to implement its agenda through regulations and rulemaking. As West Virginia's coal industry has found out, it matters not even if you follow the rules. In pursuit of this agenda, the rules can be changed on the fly. The Environmental Protection Agency has revoked the coal mining permit for Arch Coal Spruce Mine No. 1 in West Virginia's Logan County. The permit was issued 4 years ago, and since then, Arch Coal, which provides 16% of America's coal supply, has followed every jot and tittle of the rules that it was to operate under. After Arch invested $250 million in the mountaintop mining operation, it will be shut down. When fully operational, it would have employed 215 miners directly, with another 300 jobs in support services. These are, pun intended, shovel-ready jobs. As we have warned, the EPA said it was acting under the authority of the Clean Water Act, saying the mine employed destructive and unsustainable mining practices that jeopardize the health of Appalachian communities and clean water on which they depend. Funny, The EPA didn't think so 4 years ago when a Section 404 permit was issued, suggesting the extent to which this administration has politicized science, as if business and energy weren't already operating in an uncertain regulatory climate. This action essentially renders worthless every government permit, approval, or promise, particularly in an energy industry the administration seems determined to shut down. West Virginia is the second largest coal producer in the United States, which itself is the Saudi Arabia of coal. The malign fossil fuel provides $26 billion for West Virginia's economy annually, supports 60,000 jobs, and pays $1.2 billion in wages for West Virginia families. All this and much more nationally is in jeopardy, since coal provides half of America's electricity. This action, announced by Chair Nancy Sutley of the Council on Environmental Quality, prompted a sharp letter to President Obama from no less than Democrat Senator Jay Rockefeller of West Virginia. Revocation of the vigorously reviewed and lawfully issued permit, he said, has a ripple effect and needlessly throws other permits into a sea of uncertainty at a time of great economic distress. According to the EPA, it doesn't matter if you did everything right, if you followed all the rules, said West Virginia's other Democrat senator, freshman Joe Manchin. Why? They just changed the rules. The coal industry provides needed energy for our country's growing appetite for electricity, Manchin noted, promising he would fight for West Virginia's way of life. Hey, guys, President Obama and Vice President Biden are merely being true to their word. In promising a cap-and-trade system during the 2008 campaign, candidate Obama stipulated, if somebody wants to build a coal-powered plant, they can. It's just that it will bankrupt them because they're going to be charged a huge sum for all that greenhouse gas that's being emitted. Close quote. Unable to get that through Congress, and he controlled Congress, President Obama plans to use the EPA as a regulatory bludgeon to implement cap-and-trade by stealth, bankrupting the fossil fuel industry and causing energy prices to necessarily skyrocket. We're reminded of Vice President Joe Biden's comment in a rope line during the campaign. We're not supporting clean coal. Guess what? China's building two dirty coal plants every week, and it's polluting the United States. It's causing people to die. He went on to say, no coal plants in America. Build them if they're going to build them over there. Make them clean. We have an oil drilling moratorium in parts of the Gulf of Mexico and off both coasts. ANWR and other oil-rich areas in and off Alaska are off limits, as are vast areas in the West. Nuclear power is stalled, and even natural gas is under attack for its use of so-called fracking technology. Just from where, Mr. President, will your touted electric cars get their energy? Well, I'd like to get off that track for a moment. A lot of my life, I listened to a great commentator on the radio. His name was Paul Harvey. He was very famous for ending with the rest of the story. He told wonderful, interesting stories that were all true. I came across a story that reminded me very much of Paul Harvey, so I wanted to share it with you. The South Bronx in 1950 was the home of a large and thriving community, predominantly Jewish. In the 1950s, the Bronx offered synagogues, mikvahs, kosher bakeries, and kosher butcheries, all the comforts one would expect from an observant Orthodox Jewish community. The baby boom of the post-war years happily resulted in many new young parents. As a matter of course, the South Bronx had its own baby equipment store, Sixers. Sixers was located on the corner of Westchester and Fox and specialized in everything for the baby, as its slogan ran. The inventory began with cribs, baby carriages, playpens, high chairs, changing tables, and toys. It went way beyond these to everything a baby could want or need. Mr. Sixer, assisted by his son-in-law, Lou Kirshner, ran a profitable business out of the needs of the rapidly expanding child population. The language of the store was primarily Yiddish, but Sixers was a place where not only Jewish families, but also many non-Jewish ones could acquire the necessary for their newly arrived bundles of joy. Business was particularly busy one spring day, so much so that Mr. Sixer and his son-in-law could not handle the unexpected throng of customers. Desperate for help, Mr. Sixer ran out of the store and stopped the first youth he spotted on the street. "Young man," he panted, "how would you like to make a little extra money? I need some help." Mr. Sixer and Lou learned in time about their helper's Jamaican origins, and he in turn picked up a good deal of Yiddish. In time, the young man was able to converse fairly well with his employers, and more importantly, with a number of the Jewish customers whose English was not fluent. At the age of 17, the young man, while still working part-time at Sixers, began his first semester at City College of New York. He fit in just fine with his, for the most part, Jewish classmates, hardly surprising considering that he already knew their ways and their language. But the heavy studying in the engineering and later geology courses he chose proved quite challenging. The young man would later recall that Sixers offered the one stable point in his life in those days. This is where Paul Harvey would normally break and say he'd be back with the rest of the story. So in honor of Paul Harvey, here's the rest of the story. In 1993, in his position as the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, 2 years after he guided the American forces in Iraq in the Gulf War, General Colin Powell visited the Holy Land. Upon meeting Israel's Prime Minister Yitzhak Shamir in Jerusalem, he greeted the Israeli with the word, "Man kann reden Yiddish," which means, "Can we speak Yiddish?" As Shamir, stunned, tried to pull himself together, the then Secretary of State continued chatting in his second favorite language. Colin Powell will never forget his early days working at Sixers. Well, that will wrap it up for me this evening. That's going to do it. Join us next Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time and 3 p.m. Pacific for our next show. If you missed any of our episodes, you can find the archives of our past shows by going to webmasterradio.fm or on iTunes. And as long as they'll still allow me to say it, God bless you. And God bless America.